This is VOA News via remote. I'm Tommy McNeil. As the United States pushes China to close its consulate in Houston over accusations of espionage, there continues to be a campaign to get other countries to turn its back on China. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is urging India to focus on domestic supply chains and reduce its dependence on China from telecommunications and medical supplies, as Washington's ties with Beijing deteriorate dramatically. Pompeo said the online U.S. and at the online U.S.-India Business Council's India Ideas Summit that India had a chance to move supply chains away from China and reduce its reliance on Chinese companies in areas like telecommunications, medical supplies, and others. The U.S. administration has squarely blamed China for the coronavirus pandemic and accused China, like firms like Huawei Technologies, of cyber spying and facilitating human rights violations in China, charges Huawei and Beijing deny. The United States has also criticized China's new national security law for the former British colony of Hong Kong. As more passengers take to the skies and trying to do more to prevent the spread of COVID-19, airlines are doing as best they can, for example, from touch-free bag tag printing to biometric boarding. George Bush Intercontinental Airport in Houston, Texas, has put new measures in place to allow passengers to travel from a curb to aircraft while touching as few surfaces as possible. Passengers are encouraged to check in and print checked baggage tags under their smartphones. Check-in desk agents sit behind plastic screens and stickers, reminding passengers to stay 6 feet apart. This is VOA News. Globally, there have been more than 621 deaths from COVID-19, and more than 143,000 of those are in the United States. Confirmed infections exceed 15 million, with the United States looking at about 4 million of them, and Brazil's more than 2 million infections, and the two countries hold well more than a third of the world's infections. Brazil's health ministry reported a record 67,860 confirmed coronavirus cases over a 24-hour period. The previous mark for one day was 54,771 set June 19th. The new high reported Wednesday comes as some regions of the South American nation are partially reopening for business, while others that had previously controlled the spread of the virus are seeing increases. Brazil has counted nearly 83,000 deaths from COVID-19. One of the infected is President Jair Bolsonaro, who said earlier Wednesday that he tested positive for the virus for the third time in 2 weeks. Senate Republicans in the United States and the White House have reached a tentative agreement for testing funds in the next COVID-19 relief package, but deep disagreements over the scope of the $1 trillion in federal aid have forced a shift in strategy. Facing a GOP revolt, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell is preparing to roll out a handful of COVID-19 aid bills instead of a single package, according to a top lawmaker involved in the negotiations. The legislation is now expected as soon as Thursday. A key holdup remains President Donald Trump's push for a payroll tax cut. Hardly any GOP senators support that idea. The European Union has granted Honduras $80 million in aid to help the impoverished Central American nation's health system cope with the impact of the coronavirus pandemic. Despite strict measures to curb the spread of the pandemic, local hospitals have struggled to cope with the number of patients with respiratory illnesses in Honduras, which has registered more than 35,000 infections and nearly 1,000 deaths from the virus. The former Minneapolis police officer charged with murder in the death of George Floyd now faces multiple felony counts of tax evasion. Derek Chauvin and his wife, Kelly Mae Chauvin, were both charged Wednesday with multiple counts for allegedly underreporting their income to the state of Minnesota from 2014 through 2019 and for failing to file state tax returns in 2016, 2017, and 2018. Find more at voanews.com. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 23rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Another ECOWAS mediation delegation returns to Mali today, Thursday.
The purpose of the delegation is just to reinforce on what the mediator, His Excellency Goodluck Ebele Jonathan's mission, so that they could meet all the stakeholders.
Former President Bashir's trial raises hope for democracy in Sudan. Ivory Coast has a new presidential candidate. Lesotho's new prime minister comes under fire from within his own party. And Uganda's People Power Movement registers as a political party ahead of the 2021 elections.
We are unveiling the National Unity Platform as the political wing of the People Power Movement. The National Unity Platform is a duly registered political organization with the Electoral Commission, and the symbol is the umbrella.
That was Uganda Member of Parliament Robert Chakulai, a.k.a. Bobby Wine. And Zimbabweans fiercely debate reasons for the new 12-hour curfew. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. An official of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, is defending the regional group's policy of not condoning unconstitutional means of ascending to power. ECOWAS Political Affairs Director Dr. Aderemi Ajibewa says the only constitutional means of taking power allowed by ECOWAS is through the ballot box. This comes as another ECOWAS mediation mission, comprising four current and one former president, is due in Bamako today, Thursday. The June 5 protest movement has rejected ECOWAS's proposal of a unity government, which allows President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta to remain in power. Dr. Ajibewa says the ECOWAS mission will meet with all stakeholders, including Mahmoud Diko, a well-respected imam.
The purpose of the delegation is just to reinforce on what the mediator, His Excellency Goodluck Ebele Jonathan's mission, so that they could meet all the stakeholders. Basically, they will have a sort of consultation with the stakeholders, principally with the President of the Republic, His Excellency President Ibrahim Boubacar Keïta, then possibly with the Prime Minister of the Republic, His Excellency Bobo Cisse, then I think also with the representative of the Strategic Committee of the M5 RFP, also the majority coalition in Parliament. More importantly, they will be meeting the imam, who is a leading figure in the country.
The last time the delegation was there, last week, I would say, several proposals were made in terms of how to end the political impasse. And this included reconstituting the constitutional court, formation of a national government, national unity. Those were turned down. So are there new proposals coming up?
Essentially, if you look at the proposed crisis exit strategy by the mediator, the only thing is that everything has been set based on consensus and taking into account the recommendation of the inclusive national dialogue, and with a sort of proposed representation. So when you look at it, what the mediator reiterated is that it is better for the government to be in place. So you will see that the measures and the exit strategy by the mediation mission seem to have been welcomed by the stakeholders, as major steps were immediately taken. They formed a sort of a strategic committee looking at how it will be formed. So most of these resolutions of the crisis are some things that have been taken on board, except by the M5 RFP. And you all know why. They turned down the overture, which were offered to them, just insisting that they want the president to resign or to just leave the office, which will, in essence, create a vacuum. And when you look at the supplementary protocol of the ECOWAS era of the 2001, on democracy and good governance, it stipulates that unconstitutional means to power is not allowed. The only constitutional means is through ballot paper. That's why coup d'etat or even the mass demonstration and then leading to a sort of dethroning the government is not something that is a welcome idea, even by AU, the UN, and even ECOWAS as well. We want a legitimate government in power.
In my interview with one of the leading members of the protest movement, she took issue with this ECOWAS protocol on democracy and good governance. And she thought that this is another way of ECOWAS or African leaders trying to protect one of their own.
I've been in the academic community for 16 years. So I know that there's what they call the academic freedom. But the academic freedom is different from the policy as well as the practical side of it. When you look at it, the ECOWAS supplementary protocol is what is being adhered to by all member states, even compared to other regions.
Dr. Adereme Ajibewa is Director of Political Affairs for the Economic Community of West African States. He was speaking with us from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. In Ivory Coast, a former foreign minister has announced his candidacy for the October presidential election. Marcel Amon Tano, once a partner of President Alassane Ouattara, said Wednesday that he wants to be a unifier of all Ivorians. He served as President Ouattara's foreign minister from 2016 until March this year when he resigned. Sources close to Amon Tano says he plans to form his own political party in coming days. His announcement comes as the ruling RHDP party is scrambling for a candidate following the sudden death of Prime Minister Amadou Gon Coulibaly and the resignation of Vice President Daniel Kablan Duncan this month. Ivorian journalist Felix Bolny says Amon Tano may stand a chance of winning in October.
Mr. Marcel Amon Tano has his chances to win this election because probably we'll have some elders who has been different protagonists of different crises in Cote d'Ivoire, like Mr. Bedier and Mr. Ouattara, who want to run again. And Mr. Amon Tano was in the ruling party, worked with Mr. Ouattara. He needs normally Mr. Ouattara and his weaknesses. He was formerly in the party of Mr. Bedier. He belonged to Mr. Bedier's ethnic group. At this moment, the Ivorian wants the change. And I think they can make the change with the elders like Ouattara or Bedier, who will still be protagonist adversary in Cote d'Ivoire. So Mr. Amon Tano could be a possibility of change for Ivorian. He is more young than them. He is less than 17 years. So I think he could have a chance if he gets the sponsorship of the 1% population electors from 17 areas like the constitution asks to have.
Who do you think that Tano is likely to hurt in the election, the ruling party or the opposition? Because he seems to be criticizing President Ouattara for failing to bring about reconciliation among Ivorians after the civil war.
It does not belong to the ruling party because since March 19, he went from the ruling party. And he does not belong also to opposition. And in his discourse today, he says that he is the hyphen between Ivorian. He does not pronounce the word reconciliation, but being a hyphen means that I'm coming to reconcile the population with them. I am the hyphen between population and population, between young and elders, between religions, between the power and the population. It means that his program will be based on reconciliation of the population. In Cote d'Ivoire now, the real problem is the reconciliation of the population. And I think Mr. Amon Tano is going to be a candidate for this target.
Thank you very much again, Felix. It's so nice to talk with you.
Thank you, sir.
That was journalist Felix Bolny speaking with us from Ivory Coast capital, Abidjan. Ugandan musician turned opposition leader Robert Chakulayi has officially launched a political party for his People Power movement to run in next year's election. The National Unity Party plans to field Chakulayi, known by his stage name Bobby Wine, for the presidency. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
After 3 years of working under the banner of the People Power Movement, Bobby Wine on Wednesday launched a political wing named the National Unity Platform. Wine says this comes after countless failed attempts to register the People Power Movement as a political party.
We are unveiling the National Unity Platform as the political wing of the People Power Movement. The National Unity Platform is a duly registered political organization with the Electoral Commission, and the symbol is the umbrella. We have no plans of establishing a military wing. Our military wing is the People Power Movement, and our weapons are our words and our ideas, not arms of destruction and violence.
Since the formation of the People Power Movement 3 years ago, a number of legislators, including members of the ruling National Resistance Movement and Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, have allied with People Power. Last week, President Yoweri Museveni met some of his party members who had allied with Wine's movement, and they apologized for straying from the party. Nambeshe John, a member of the ruling party who allied with PPM and did not attend the meeting, says he is happy People Power Movement now has a political wing that will enable him to stand for the next general elections.
We have been labeled rebels just because of the removal of presidential age limit when we voted against it. Moreover, that was a decision of the people. So I am not one who is about again to go into a marriage with NRM despite the huge resources they have, despite the power they have.
Political analyst Mathias Impuga says the formation of the National Unity Platform is a whole new start for politicians.
It's now going to give confidence to the fence sitters to finally make a decision whether they are going to follow their old conflicted political groupings or are going to finally take a decision and make a tough choice to work with People Power, either directly as members of the organization or in a memoranda.
NRM spokesman Rogers Mulinda says the formation of a political wing by People Power is no threat to them.
People Power is not a threat to NRM. And I really wonder why politicians of mature reasoning would really say we are going to pick forms from People Power. Because they don't have the structures. It's more of a movement on media, but at the grassroots they are not there.
Currently, all political parties in Uganda are carrying out nominations for party primary elections ahead of the 2021 general elections. Wine is being viewed as one of the top contenders against Museveni, who picked up his nomination forms on Monday. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America and James Batty in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 23rd. Former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir went on trial in Khartoum Tuesday this week for staging the 1989 coup that brought him to power. The trial has raised hopes that a civilian-led democracy can take root in Sudan after 30 years of Bashir's oppressive rule. Naba Mohideen reports from Khartoum.
The trial of former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir and 28 co-defendants has been eagerly awaited by military officers who opposed the 1989 coup that brought Bashir to power. Ahmed al-Tayyib is a former army major who was ousted from the military and was periodically arrested by the Bashir regime. He became a leader of the protests that helped drive Bashir from power. The WhatsApp message, al-Tayyib says, starting the trials of the 1989 coup makers fulfills one of the main demands for justice that they have been wanting for many years. Al-Tayyib adds that if there is no punishment, coups could happen again, so restrictive punishment should be implemented. The longtime former president, who was ousted by the military in April 2019, is facing charges of undermining the constitution and violating the Armed Forces Act in the 1989 coup. Bashir's lawyers are defiant. They say that the trials are political and have no legal ground. Zine El Abidine Muhammad is one of the former president's attorneys. He says no one was tried in the past for military coups. The trials for the May 1985 coup were political. This trial is political and they will legally stand against it. They have their vision and legal groundings to defend the case. After taking power in 1989, Bashir issued a presidential pardon for those who took part in the 1985 coup. Sudan's transitional authorities have pledged to hand over Bashir and some of his aides to the International Criminal Court to face charges of war crimes and genocide. The charges are related to the conflict in Sudan's Darfur region, which left an estimated 300,000 people dead and displaced millions from their homes. The surrender last month of a Darfur militia leader who Bashir supported has raised hope that Bashir could also be put on trial at the ICC. Political analyst Al-Fatih Mahmoud says the trial in Khartoum is paving the way for Bashir's trial on war crimes charges. Mahmoud says the current trial represents the first step for the transitional justice that also needs to consider other important cases, including war crimes in Darfur. He adds that this step is paving the way for ICC trials for the accused participants, including al-Bashir, either by sending them to The Hague or forming a hybrid court. The trial begins as Sudan's joint civilian military transitional government tries to implement reforms in the judiciary and has launched peace talks with rebel groups that the Bashir government fought for years. Sudan hopes to soon be removed from the U.S. State Department's list of countries that sponsor terrorism. Removal from the list would help the economy by allowing Sudan to receive foreign aid and investment. Naba Muhyiddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
In Lesotho, new Prime Minister Moketsi Majoro is under fire from his own All Basotho Convention ABC party, the biggest party in the current ruling coalition. Majoro came to power in May this year following the collapse of Mbatho Prime Minister Thomas Thabane's government. Mr. Thabane's wife, Masaya, was charged in February this year with the murder of Thabane's estranged wife, Lepolelo. Former Prime Minister Thabane has reportedly fled to South Africa to avoid being charged. Now, supporters of former Prime Minister Thabane have threatened to expose what they call Majoro's dirty secrets if he does not give in to their demands to drop murder charges against former Prime Minister Thabane. Shalani Pori is the National Executive Committee member of the ABC and one of those making the threat.
I'm the one who was quoted saying that, actually. In actual fact, what I was saying is Mr. Thabane was forcefully removed from his premier position by the people who were supposed to protect him, as he is an old man. He's 83 years old, and he had already indicated that, no, guys, you have to check among yourselves and then give me the name of the person whom you want to succeed me, because I want to retire though my tenure in the office expires in 2 years to come. So these people, conniving with our executive committee, which is NEC, which I'm the member of, they connived to say, no, let's hold the budget, the national budget, meaning let's not pass the budget so that the country will be in dire situation of lack of funds, so that we can compel this old man to step down now. That is what caused all the problem.
I am not sure if the former prime minister has been charged, but if it is true that his supporters are making these threats against the new prime minister, wouldn't this be blackmail?
No, there is nothing like that. Actually, the charge was the scapegoat for the current prime minister in connivance with the commissioner of police here to topple the old man. There is no case like that. This matter charge that they are talking about occurred even before Tom Thabane could be the prime minister. For the past 3 years, why didn't they investigate the same case? They brought this issue when they wanted him to step down. Not that the old man shouldn't go to the court. No, we are not saying that. We say the two processes of taking somebody to a court must be followed.
Do you mind sharing with us some of these dirty secrets about the prime minister?
There are many, sir, we can talk about them. There was one successful business Mosotho man here in Lesotho who was successful. So during his tenure while he was a PS, they forced that gentleman's business to collapse. And that collapsed made many Basotho people to suffer because they couldn't get their money. And that money, we need to know where that money is. It's one of those things I can indicate. Actually, we didn't point the finger at him as a person. We only said, we know the dirty linens, the wrongdoings of everybody in Lesotho here. Even the current prime minister, we know what he did, which offended people here. We know the past prime minister, Ndatemo Sisidi, what he has been alleged of. We know what Ndatemo Thabane is being alleged of. None of those people were ever taken to court. That's what the statement meant.
Some of these people who are threatening to reveal the so-called secret about the prime minister, could it be that they are bitter because they did not get positions in the new government?
No, the person who's supposed to be bitter is himself because he doesn't even qualify to be the prime minister.
Shola Nepori is National Executive Committee member of Lesotho's All Basotho Convention ABC Party. He was speaking with us from the capital, Maseru. Zimbabwe's government has imposed an indefinite dusk to dawn curfew and other travel restrictions, saying the measures are needed to contain rising cases of COVID-19. The Southern African country has more than 1,800 confirmed cases and 26 deaths. Health experts say the true number of infections is likely higher. However, rights groups and critics say the measures are aimed at stopping anti-government protests planned for July 31st. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Announcing the 12-hour curfew late Tuesday on national television, President Emmerson Mnangagwa said it was part of efforts to contain a spike in coronavirus cases that he described as a worrisome development.
Therefore, this sobering reality means that we can no longer be complacent, and that requires urgent and decisive measures. Fellow Zimbabweans, these urgent and necessary measures will entail curtailing the freedoms we have always enjoyed and had grown accustomed to. From now on, these freedoms stand suspended and deferred in the interest of all of us, indeed, in the interest of our children and our nation, which must survive, thrive and prosper beyond this pandemic. No responsible government places its citizens in harm's way. Hence, my government will do all it can to preserve and protect the right to life.
He did not mention the planned July 31st protests that his sympathizers say are meant to depose his government. The government said it would deploy security forces, including the army, to quell any demonstrations. In an interview, Tendai Biti, vice president of the country's main opposition party, the Movement for Democratic Change, said the president had no reason to impose the restrictions.
It's madness. You can't impose a state of emergency. You have no right to declare a state of emergency. It's serious curtailment of rights. You need parliament.
But they're saying they're trying to deal with coronavirus.
It's just a fake excuse. They're afraid of 31 July.
Asked about Biti's allegations, government officials said they stick by Mnangagwa's reasons for the curfew. Dr. Nyika Mahashi, the president of Zimbabwe College of Public Health Physicians, says lockdowns alone cannot stop the spread of the COVID-19 pandemic. He says the new measures, which include banning religious gatherings, should be complemented with the requirements to wear face masks and enforcing hygienic practice.
And we expand testing. Those that are infected, we isolate them. And more importantly, I think also that I want to mention in the context of Zimbabwe is ensuring that the facilities, the health facilities, are ready to deal with complicated cases. We know 5 to 10% of the cases complicate and require oxygen and intensive care hospitalization. So ensuring that the hospitals are prepped with oxygen, intensive care beds for the few complicated cases. This is something we've not been able to do, and it needs to be addressed urgently. This is also an opportunity to address some existing health system challenges.
That was a reference to nurses who are boycotting their jobs, saying the less than $50 salary they earn each month is leaving them in poverty. The government has offered a $75 COVID-19 allowance for 3 months, but so far that has failed to lure back the nurses. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
And that's it for this Thursday, July 23rd edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington wishing you a very good day.